switch it. Okay, today is Monday, July 2nd, 2012, and I'm interviewing
Gong Sheng.
S-H-E-N-G.
And Sheng X-I-O-N-G, yeah.
And I'm going to write here that you give me permission. To interview you and use materials. And may I take a photograph of you?
Yeah.
For my camera. And photograph of you for a book about in Michigan. And other, I put educational purposes. And other media. Okay. This will at least give us something to start with. If you can sign your name. Okay, as I just explained to you, I won't re-explain what I'm doing. I'm very grateful that you're willing to let me interview you. It's a real honor and a privilege. If you can tell me a little bit about your background, family story, and then I'll shift somewhere as a sort of a natural shift happens. To ask you to more focus on your own life. And I'm coming at this really from a writer's perspective, and I'm interested in people's stories. And for the background in terms of factual information, I've been reading other books, and while they're not specifically geared towards Michigan, the stories from the people that I interview can complement the factual stories.
Okay.
So even if you say, well, you believe such and such or think such and such, by interviewing you and for your story, it's not like an academic book in terms, I mean, it is an academic book, but your story is not an academic story. So there's not a right or a wrong.
Yeah.
So, if you could tell me a little bit, all I know is that you're a student at MSU, and let's see, you come from Warren.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to try to be quiet, and I'll just sort of guide you a little bit, but go for it.
All right. So, my parents, they first arrived in Iowa in around 1979. They lived there, they worked, and then they moved to Ohio. Before they came here, they already had my oldest brother, Long, and he's...
What is his name?
Long, B-L-O-N-G. So they already had him in Thailand when they were at the refugees camp, so they came over here. And then after Ohio, they moved to... Did I say Iowa? After Iowa, they moved to Ohio,
right.
And that's where they lived for many years. There they had my two other brothers, which is Doua, D-O-U-A, and then G, G-E-E. And then they also had my oldest sister, Nu, and H-N-U. So they had them, and they lived in Ohio for many years. They shared a house with my uncles and aunts. And during that time, my mother was a seamstress at a bridal store. Yeah. And then my dad, he worked in CNC machine operating.
In what, I'm sorry?
CNC machine operating.
Okay, before you go even further forward.
All right, yep.
Can you go back?
Go back. Okay, all right.
Then we'll come from here and then move to you.
Sorry.
There's no apology.
I don't remember what city where they where my parents were from in Laos.
But they were both born in Laos?
They were both born in Laos. I believe they got married in Laos before the Vietnam War. My uncle, which is my dad's older brother, he was like a general. So he was all, you know, in the war active, but my dad was still a little bit younger. I think they were only like around 17, 18 when that happened, during the move to the refugee camps.
Okay. But when you said Vietnam War, were you referring though really to the war in Laos?
What they call
the secret war?
The secret war, yeah.
Okay.
That one, yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to contradict.
No, I just want to... Uh-huh. Sorry.
I was like, no apologies. Uh-huh. You're fine.
Yep.
So they were, your father and your uncle were in the military?
In the secret war.
Okay.
Yeah, in the secret war. In Laos. I think around the time when it got really bad, they, and General Bing Pao left, that's when they started like flooding to Thailand. So my dad would tell us stories about how they would hide in the jungles, and my oldest brother, actually they had him in Laos, I believe. When they hid in the jungles, he was crying a lot.
He was what?
He would cry a lot.
Your father?
My brother. So, because he was still newborn, so they would have to, like, try to, you know, make him, like, be quiet while they were trying to hide from the Vietnamese army. And I guess, like, after fleeing the jungles a couple times, they finally crossed the Mekong River. And my dad would tell me that they would use bamboos to help them swim across. And then when they swam across, I don't know how many years they spent in the refugee camp, but all I know is that they came to the U.S. around 1978-1979. All I know is that my dad and my mom, they came first before my grandpa and my other uncles.
Your grandpa and grandma, or just grandpa?
Grandpa. My grandma actually passed away in Thailand or Laos, but she passed away before she made the journey here.
Those are your mother's parents or your father's parents?
My father's parents. My mother's parents, her dad was, I guess he was sort of like a mayor of one of the cities. So a lot of the time her family was like trying to hide, and like they had to hide his, like bury his pictures and everything because they couldn't carry it with them. They had to bury his pictures. So, you know, because if they carry it, then they would get killed. So all I know is that I have no pictures of my grandpa from my mother's side. Unfortunately, he got sick before he was able to come over here.
Your grandpa?
Yeah, so he passed away over there. This is my mom's father. So all of her brothers and sisters, they're over here in America now. But then her mother is still back in Laos. Yeah, and she's remarried now. And she has another sister over there that's with them.
So it's her aunt, your mother's aunt? It's a sister to your grandma?
Oh, my mom's sister.
Oh.
She has a sister that's there. I'm not too familiar with their side of the story of how they came here, but all I know is that half of her siblings are here and half of her siblings are there.
Do you think they might be receptive for me to go to visit them and interview them? I mean, you'd have to check with them, obviously.
The ones here?
Your parents?
All my parents?
I know you can't speak for them.
Oh, well, my dad, he speaks English, so he can help you. You know, he'll be able to answer the questions.
But the question thing also is, does he want, I mean, do you think... After we finish, I'll ask you to check with them and see.
I can check with him. It's just he works a lot, so...
What does he do?
Right now, he's a CNC operator. Oh. So he's doing the same work that he's always had experience in coming here. But about that, my mom actually passed away from leukemia. Yeah, so...
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. So the person that you would interview is my stepmom. You can get probably a different perspective from her, because when she's a little bit younger than my dad, so like she was able to experience high school here, but and like go to a little bit of college here, and then she didn't get married until later, so you can get a different perspective from her.
Right.
So
how old were you when your mom died?
I was 10. Yeah. My dad, on the other hand, he didn't get to do any high school, but he did do a little bit of adult education. So, and he got.
You said adult education?
Yeah, so he was able to get like a few certificates.
What certificate?
Certificates. I don't know what specifically for, but I think it's more for his type of job that he's doing right now.
Okay. I just wanted some kind of background picture.
Okay. So my dad and my mom, they came over here with my oldest brother, and then they had the siblings. I think a few years later, my uncles, the one that was in the military, him and my grandparents, they all came afterwards. If you want, you could probably interview him too, if you need more of that type of background, like the older
people. Okay, well, we'll see.
Okay.
So where were you born?
I was born at the St. John's Hospital in Warren. And then we lived in Warren until 2001. So I was born in 1990. So we lived there until 2001, and then we moved to Sterling Heights.
Wait a minute, until 2001, mm-hmm. And moved.
Oh wait, no, sorry, that was a mistake.
It's okay.
Is it 2000? I was in second grade when we switched, when we moved to Sterling Heights, so... So maybe it was around 1998.
Okay.
So we moved to Sterling Heights. I believe the reason why we moved to Sterling Heights is because my mother found out she had leukemia. And so I guess her and my dad made a decision that, you know, like they've been saving up too. So we're like, why don't we move to someplace nicer? So we can spend the last couple years, you know, with our child. Well, you know, so she can spend the last couple years with us and, like, pretty much give us, you know, the last of her mom, like, our memory of her. So, we moved to Sterling Heights, and we've been living in that same house till today. And then my mom passed away in 2001. During that time was when my dad got laid off too. Yeah, so it was kind of a bad year. And then from there on, you know, my dad, it was just me and my dad, because my oldest brother, Bong, he graduated college from Kettering. He got his bachelor's from Kettering University.
Where is that?
It's in Pontiac. Or Flint. And then...
That's one of your brothers.
Yep. Bong. B-L-O-N-G. So he graduated with his bachelor's in engineering. And then he finished his master's at Chalmers. It was a study abroad in Sweden.
Where?
Sweden.
What's it called?
Chalmers, Chalmers.
In Sweden?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
He's the one that went far and beyond, and he's the one that we all look up to. So right now he's residing in San Francisco, and he's a consultant for a company. I'm not exactly sure what it's called, but I know it deals with sound vibration because that's what he got his master's in. The second notice would be my older sister.
What is her name again?
Nu, H-N-U. H-N-U. She attended Oakland University.
She goes there now? Or she did?
She did. She went there for 2 years and she didn't finish. She got married during that year, I believe, when she dropped out. So she got married and now they're living in Ohio, and she has a family, and her husband's pretty successful, so she's just a stay-at-home mom.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one would be Dua.
Just saying, what part of Ohio?
I think Cleveland.
Is that where your family was living too before?
Not exactly sure.
That's okay.
Yeah. Oh, Toledo. That's where they were when they
So your parents were in Toledo?
Yeah, they were in Toledo. So that's where they were before they moved to Warren. But the next one would be my brother G.
G.
Okay. Right after high school, he joined the Marines. He did his full four years. After that, he went to Full Sail. It's like a Full Sail, F-U-L-S-A-I-L.
F-U-L-L.
And then S-A-I-L. It's like a private school for like movies and like directing and stuff like that. So
really? Where?
That's in Florida. So he went there for the 2 years and got his degree. And right now he's in Los Angeles. I don't know what company he works for, but I know he's worked on a couple films with like special effects editing.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Dua, forgot to say. Dua is actually, I'm sorry, G's the youngest brother. Dua's in between you and G.
So
Dua's before G. I'm sorry about that.
Don't apologize. D what?
D-O-U-A. So basically after high school, he attended CMU for 2 years. Realized school isn't for him. And so he joined the Marines.
Wow.
Yeah, he did his 2 years. And then he finished the rest just like staying at home and going there. He was on reserve, I believe. Yeah, that's what they call it. Now he's just working at Forcia. He's like a line manager or something.
At where?
Forcia, F-A. You are. I think ECIA.
And you said a manager?
He's like a line manager because it's like an assembly line. He currently just moved to Lansing and he's married.
This is my backup to help me understand the tape.
Yeah. Sorry, my thoughts are kind of jumbled right now.
This is the way it always is, so okay.
And he has a family, so it's his wife and a baby girl. So he's just working and his wife is just working too. His wife is Lisa. She actually grew up in Diamonddale,
mm-hmm.
Lansing. And then Now to me, I guess?
Yes.
Okay. Let me know if you want, you know, me to explain anything more, okay? So I graduated. Did you want to know, like, every detail, like...
Let's go way back.
Way back? Okay.
You were born, you said where?
In Warren. In Warren, yep. So I attended school up to second grade, and then during the second half of second grade is when we switched to Sterling Heights. Okay. Yeah. And to me, it was just a lot different.
In what way?
The school system was just a lot different. I'm not trying to bash on Warren, but when we were there, you know, you never had homework. You know, it's a lot of fun. But coming to Sterling Heights, we had homework every day except for Friday, and the things were a lot stricter, and things were more competitive and challenging. But growing up, I learned to appreciate that a lot better because I feel like the way I am academically today is probably because of how well that school district was. I attended school there all the way up until I graduated high school. When it came to...
Is it a better off community, or...?
It's a better community. Everybody is more, pride to themselves. Everything's a lot cleaner. People are more respectful compared to Warren, where everybody is outside all day. There's just everybody's outside all day. People are loud outside and things like that. But Sterling Heights was more quiet. The teachers in school, you can tell the difference. They're a lot more stricter here, but it wasn't necessarily bad. I guess you can say it was more simple. I don't know. We lived in suburbs. It was more of like the, I guess you can say, upper middle class suburban area compared to Warren, where everything's really close.
Now, in Warren, I know a lot of Hmong people have settled there, but were there a lot where you were going to school, or?
When I was in Warren, I don't
when
remember.
You were real little.
Yeah, I don't remember there being Hmong students, because I know that, like, we'll say this is where I was living. A lot of my cousins and, like, because my cousins, you know, they grew up with a lot of Hmong kids in their, you know, school. They live more on, like, the other side of Van Dyke, sort of. But, I mean, when my brothers were there, my brothers and them were in high school, middle school, and, like, they had Hmong classmates, too. But maybe I just didn't remember. But when I came to Sterling Heights, there was only, like, well, actually, up until... fourth, fifth grade, I think I was only the Hmong person there,
In the whole school?
In the whole school, the elementary school. With the Asian people, there was probably only four or five of us. But in fifth grade was when the new Hmong girl came. And we've been best friends ever since, yeah. So like, I guess the new Hmong family, they moved a couple streets away from us. So, her and I, we pretty much attended the rest of our school years together. When I was in middle school, there was another Hmong family that lived a couple blocks away from us. They had twins, and so they were much younger than me. So they were attending middle school too, or elementary school at the time. But they moved after a couple years. And if I can remember, there was another Hmong family. I think they're still here. But they're a lot younger than us.
Now, when you were in the first school, and granted you were very young, so you might not...
Yeah.
Were you conscious of the fact that your family came from somewhere else? Or not at that age yet?
Not really. Like, back in elementary school, when I was at... Well, elementary school period. For us, it was just like, the only difference was mom and dad's more strict. mom and dad doesn't really know how to speak English. They're not as involved as your friends from school, you know.
What did you say about their English?
Like, their English was, like, they speak Hmong to you most of the time at home. It's just now that we're older and we speak English all the time that my dad actually speaks English to us. But before, it was strictly just Hmong, you know. My mom was a little more lenient, so... But she did speak a lot of Hmong, too. But it's just, they would try to teach us Hmong, more Hmong, the Hmong alphabet, the sounds, vowels. They try to make us more aware, but when you're a kid, you just want to have fun. So you didn't really pay much attention.
What did you say about when you're a kid? You what? You said something important.
You just want to have fun. Yeah. you don't care about who, you know, mm-hmm. You want to be something else. I guess when I was little, like, you know, growing up with, like, a community where it's only, you know, like, Caucasian people, like, you want to be more like them. Like, you want to be able to, like, I guess, do the things that they did. Like, all my friends were involved in activities and after-school activities, sports, you know, their parents were really involved. But for us, it's like, mom and dad's like, nope. Go to school and you come back home. You know, go to school, come back home. Do your homework, you know. Like, those sports, you're just gonna get hurt and stuff like that. So growing up, it was always a struggle with that. Like, like my friends would be like safety guards and I'd want to be safety guard. And my parents were just like, no, you know, you don't need to do that.
Did you get together with cousins at all?
Growing up, I spent a lot of time with my cousins.
Kind of a social network outside the immediate nuclear family. Outside your parents and your sister.
Yeah.
Okay.
Luckily, like, with me, I had a lot of, like, girl cousins and boy cousins that were growing up at the same time, like, my age. We're all around the same age right now. Like, I'm 21, or we range from, like, 18 to 25.
Well, that's nice.
So, like, there's a lot of us, yeah. So, you know, I spend a lot more time with them than I did with the friends from school. Because for the parents, it's just like, you know, you go to school, you come home. Even if you want to go play, you can't really go play, you know. But, oh, you know, you can go. I guess, like, when we were younger, our parents would visit each other a lot. I noticed that change a lot as we grew up, like, as we grow older and as they grow older to our parents. Because back then, like, in Warren and, like, when my mom was still around, like, every weekend we would do, like, we'll eat dinners together, we'll cook big meals and have our, like, aunts and uncles come over, or we'll go over there every weekend, or, like, we'll go visit. We have some cousins that, instead of settling in Warren and Detroit area, they settled in the Saginaw area, because I guess the church that sponsored them mm-hmm. was from there. So, like, we would have weekend trips to go and, like, just spend time with them. So, like, I guess during that time I would call, like, my friends, like, my cousins and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that was that. Well, what else did I say?
I had you go back a little bit.
Uh-huh.
So, when did your father remarry? How old were you?
Okay, so that's a little tricky. So my mom passed away, like, September 24, 2011. So maybe about... 2001. It was kind of soon. So, like, maybe less than half a year.
Mm-hmm.
He married a lady from Minnesota. They married... She had kids already. She had four kids that she brought over, and at the time it was just me and my dad and my brother Joel, because my sister was already married. The oldest one was, I believe he was in Sweden, he was in Sweden. And then G was in the Marines. So
so it was you and one brother and then her four kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the kids, they were really young, so we attended, we were around the same age group, so we went to school together. Joel was just doing his own thing because he was way older. It was good. She was really nice. She didn't speak that much English. I know during the time that she was with us, she was still trying to get her citizenship. And her kids would help her. But that only lasted for a couple years, and then they divorced. I guess if you want to know why my dad married so soon, his reasoning was he needed someone to help take care of me. And usually,
which is common.
Yeah,
I
usually,
mean, among any ethnic
yeah.
group.
So usually, yeah. So he wanted to marry someone as soon as possible to take care of me. So after that, after the couple of years, her and her kids left. And then it was just me and my dad and my oldest brother. And I think it was probably half a year to a year. He met my stepmom now, Ashley. And she's a little bit younger. The one before was, she was about the, not maybe like 5 years younger than my dad. But this one is like about, so she's like 38. My dad's like, I think she's 40-something. My dad's 54 now. So, like, pretty, like, there's a huge age gap between them.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see. They got married, I think maybe it was 2000.
Hold on just a second. Let me see if this is even, we've got it there, so I probably shouldn't have stopped it. But. Okay, well, we'll just see what happens. I don't know what I did with the instructions, but anyway, so you were, what, like middle school when your dad remarried the second time?
Yep, mm-hmm. Middle school.
And she's still with your dad now?
They're
still married or no?
The second one?
Yes.
No. So the first, well, the second stepmom were there. Well, okay, so after my mom was the first
there was a short term.
Yeah, okay.
So then there was another one.
Yep, that's the one that's still with us.
Oh, okay.
Did
she have children at all?
Yeah, they just, well, they have my brother Nathan, which is 5 years old now. Mm-hmm. And then Lily, she's 4 years old. She just turned four. So they're two funny kids. I love them to death. They're just awesome.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's
so
good.
I think, if anything, they help bring the family a little bit better, closer. Like
the two kids.
The two kids.
Or the whole.
Well, between me and my mom, my stepmom, because we had, you know, some issues. Like she's just, I guess, I was just adjusting because she never had kids, and then like it's like stepmom. And two
uh-huh.
kids, yeah. But everything's a lot better now, you know, with these two kids, like, they make my life more entertaining, because I've always wanted little siblings, you know, because there was such a huge age gap between me and my siblings, so, like, I never had anyone to play with, so now, like, I have these two little kids that, like, I just love to take care of, so.
That's sweet.
Yeah, they, I think Yeah. Yep, so. There's two of them. And so right now it's just them two and my mom and my dad living at home. And my uncle, which is my dad's stepbrother, he's a little bit younger. He's like maybe mid-20s, late-20s. He's staying with them. So then Sterling Heights. So I guess she had them while I was in high school, and then when I graduated, I lived in the dorms here the first 2 years, and then during the summer times, I'd go home and I'll just, you know, help them babysit or just spend time with them. And then now that I'm at the apartment, because I live in the apartment this year, I'm working in the summer and I'm taking classes, so I haven't been able to go home that often.
What kind of work are you doing?
I'm waitressing at Thai Kitchen with, yeah. So I work Tuesdays and Thursdays and I just help them out there.
So I'll see you tomorrow because I'm interviewing Chu and just after 2.
After 2? Oh, I'm leaving around 2, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
She doesn't know I was interviewing her. She knew that I had interviewed Christine, but she said she gets students to work there.
Yeah.
So, when you were finishing high school, mm-hmm. how did you get the idea you wanted to go to college?
So,
this is where,
yep.
You're the next generation.
Yeah. Growing up, I always knew I wanted to go to college. I think my brother plays a big part of that. And my parents do too, because growing up they were always like, you know, study hard in school so you can go to college. My dad always wanted me to be a professor, but I was like, I don't like teaching. But growing up I was always an artistic kid. You know, I like to draw.
Really?
You know, and like, I think it was like fifth grade when they started introducing you to like the different careers. I wanted to be a fashion designer and all that. When I hit middle school, I was looking into something more like, I guess more international, because that's when me and my friend, we started watching like Korean and Japanese dramas and wanting to learn the language. And during that time I still didn't really care what I wanted to be, but I still had that artistic side to me. Another thing about me is I'm good at math and science, which is so weird. But in sixth grade they made us do like a test or something. I don't know how they did it, but the teachers chose certain students to take the accelerator program once we hit junior high.
What's it called?
An accelerator program.
Accelerator.
Yeah.
Okay.
So some of us, we started with like, I think algebra, while the rest was still like studying math. So me and a few students, we started out there and we were more in the accelerated math class, and that followed us through until we graduated.
Wow.
Yeah. That goes the same as the science classes as well.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's very good.
Yeah, yes. That's really good. I think that's partially due to my dad forcing me to do the like multiplication tables, and I was like, little, like he would make me do math problems and all this. I hated it, but he made me do it, and I'm thankful for that too, because I think that really helped me a lot. And then let's see, so from
did
there,
you look at other schools or just MSU or what?
I looked at other schools. Initially I wanted to go to University of Michigan. I wanted to go to U of M, but then my sister-in-law, she graduated from MSU, and I came to MSU, and I'm like, oh, I love the campus, you know, and I know a lot of people here, and I'm like, you know, it might be nice here, too. And then I also considered CMU, Central Michigan.
You completed?
Oh, I considered it.
Oh, considered.
Yeah.
Oh.
I didn't like the campus though, so I was like,
this is beautiful.
Yeah, here. I was like, I'll just stick to one of these two. And then I realized, I don't know if U of M is for me. I had some friends that went there, and they're just like, the load is crazy, and I'm just like, I think I'll just go to MSU then.
What did you say there, what?
The load, like the homework load, it's just crazy, like,
yeah.
And I was like, I don't know if I can handle it, because I know myself, my study habits aren't perfect yet. Like, I think I'll just go to MSU, but going to MSU, the next struggle was what did I want to major in? And I had a huge struggle with that, and my parents were kind of mad at me too because I was so iffy about it. But it was between like pre-med or business. I didn't know what in business yet, but pre-med or business. My reasons were I was taking AP Biology.
I'm so right brain, so sorry.
Okay. And like we were learning about like you know, like birth and stuff like that. So I was like, you know, I'm really interested in that. Like throughout the whole subject I was just interested compared to like plants. So like that was something that I really enjoyed. And during that time, my stepmother, you know, she was pregnant too, so, you know, I got to experience that too, so it's just like, I was like, oh, you know, maybe I want to be an OBGYN, you know, so I was like, maybe I can do that. But then I thought about it, and it's just like, I just don't think I have, like, the heart for it. Like, I don't know if I can, like, I know I can do it, it's just, I don't know if I want to fully commit myself to that. Because I like everything, so it's so like, it's so hard to decide. So the other option was business, and I took Japanese throughout my 3 years of high school.
You took Japanese?
Yeah, because our school offered it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I took Japanese for 3 years there, and I really enjoyed it, and through that, it kind of gave me a different perspective of the world, because we got to see like different, like, have you seen the movie Baraka?
No.
Okay. Well, basically...
What is it? Baraka?
Yeah, B-A...
Did it just come out?
No, it's old.
No.
B-A-R-A-K-A. I think that's what it's called. But basically, it's like a it's only music, it's a documentary. And it's like, they take different parts of the world, like visual from like the poor, to like the rich in Japan, to the U.S. and they just show different parts of the world and stuff.
Oh, I'd like to see this.
Yeah,
you
should see it. It's
really
cool. It's very interesting. The music's beautiful and like the way they captured everything was just a totally different feel that you wouldn't see.
So it's the visual and the music and no words.
No words. Yeah.
Wow.
So like.
That sounds very interesting.
Yeah, and then my brother going to Sweden and stuff like that too. Like, I guess with my brothers and all their experiences and then, you know, with the teachers and the stuff that I, you know, saw at school, it kind of made me want to be out there more rather than just stay here. I want to be out there more. So I was like, you know, maybe I can go into international business or something. But, at MSU, like, the way that the business school is set up is you have to apply and they have, I don't know how many, maybe four or five different majors that you can do. And then international business is like a specialization. So I guess because business is more, like you can do a lot more with it, I decided to go into that. And then my first 2 years there, after learning more about the majors, because at first I went in as general business, but then I realized like you need to do something more specific if you want to, you know, I guess make more money or have a better career. You need to be more, like you want to specialize in something more specific. So I chose accounting because I really like it, although I struggle with it.
You like what?
I struggle so much with it, but I love it. Like it's just, it's interesting to me. So, I've been doing that ever since, and I graduate, hopefully, next year in May 2013. And so, going back, another struggle that I had before going to college is like money. Because my dad was laid off, he like tried opening up a Photoshop business, and we got the idea because we have some relatives in North Carolina, and they have like 3 successful photo studios, and so we decided to do that. But I mean, with how the Michigan economy was like at that time, it was really good. And then not only that, my dad's lack of knowledge of business and how to run things, that also kind of contributed to the downfall of that. So we closed that down. We opened it for maybe 3 years. But I think that might have created some debt for my dad.
Some what?
Some debt for my dad. And so my dad, off the bat, he didn't really have that much money. And then my stepmom, she's helped my dad, try to finish paying that off and, starting their new lives. And so one of the things that he wanted me to do is, instead of going to university, why don't you just start off at a community college? But for me, I feel like I think it's best if everyone can, or if they want to start off at a university. Because I know a lot of people that started off at a community college and they just end up, getting stuck there, staying there, A lot of the Hmong kids that I know especially, they just go there and they get stuck and then they have a hard time transferring out. So I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, I know for sure I want MSU already.
That's very
good. So I'm just going to go out there and just, go ahead. And one of the reasons why I was able to do that is because of my siblings. Like, they're very... I love my siblings because I feel like they're more open-minded to compared to other siblings. I have a lot of cousins that have older siblings, and they're just very narrow-minded and just like, stay in the family, be more like, I guess do what mom and dad says. But my siblings were like, no, don't listen to mom and dad, you know what you want, go ahead and go for it,
It's beautiful.
Yeah, and they were my support financially, emotionally and physically, so,
they helped pay you for your school?
Yeah, my oldest brother, they'll give me money.
I'm really moved. No, it's very moving.
They'll give me money to spend and stuff, but when it comes to school, I pretty much did everything myself. Financially, I applied, by myself. I learned how to, take care of the loans and stuff. Whenever I needed money, my parents would help. But I tried my best to not have to do that. My siblings would help every once in a while. When I needed to take out private loans, my brother Blanc, he helped co-sign it for me. So basically, college is all on me. I'm gonna have to repay it back when I'm done, but to me, education is an investment. Just some of my friends, their parents were able to go to college or get some college, so then they're able to have careers. But for my parents and my uncles and family, they're a lot, older, so, throughout their whole lives, they always had to find an assembly line job or factory job or something. So it's always been a struggle for them. And with us kids, we always saw that, seeing mom and dad work from 6 in the morning all the way to 7 at night, and it's just it's hard for them and they're tired. So that's kind of that kind of encourages us to study harder. Well, for me, it does. And I think another reason why I'm able to be a lot more open-minded about everything is when we moved to Sterling Heights, my mom, she made sure she put me in music. So she put me in piano lessons. She helped me play the violin. She helped me play, like, dance ballet. She was different, you know. She, like, wanted to make sure that we were well-rounded, you know. Compared to my dad, it was just like, no, you don't know. But my mom made sure that, you know, what is that? My brothers and them were in wrestling. My sister was in track and cheerleading. I think that was all because of my mom. Because most mom dads would be like, no, just go to school, come home. You know, daughters, you know, you come home, you learn how to cook and clean. Son, they were more lenient on the sons.
But your dad must be very proud of you.
I know he is. He's very proud. He's a lot more soft-hearted because we're all older now. So he doesn't say much anymore. Because he knows that, you know, we're not messing around and that we're for real about what we want to do. So, I thank my mom for a lot of those things because I think because of her, we're able to get that flexibility of being able to do the things that we wanted. And I carried the violin up until high school. Started in fourth grade. During high school, I got first chair for second chair violin. So that was like second best almost. And my conductor, teacher, he encouraged me to join the youth orchestra for Oakland University. And, you know, I loved violin. I wanted to do it. You know, I wasn't sure if it was something I wanted to major in, but it was something that I wanted to, you know, keep with me forever, right? So I wanted to join. Unfortunately, I couldn't because, like, my stepmom, she's a little bit more old-fashioned, too. And I guess she kind of went with whatever my dad said, but they were like, no, you know, like, it's the lessons were too expensive. And then not only that, if you're not going to major in it, don't do it. But for me, it wasn't about majoring in it. It was just something about making me stand out, you know, something that I can enjoy and carry with me. Because I'll give you a little background on the history of my, like, family and their education, like my family, like my aunts and uncles and cousins. I think we don't have any doctors. We don't have any PhDs. I think the only master is my oldest brother. I think I have like three cousins that had a bachelor's, and then the rest are just still trying to get it. A bachelor's in the community college.
Mm-hmm.
Very few went to university. A lot of them went to community college. So that's why I wanted to go straight to university, because I didn't want to, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's just I didn't want to have to struggle the way that they did. And also thing is, I think the reason why a lot of my cousins are stuck like that is because their parents they're older than my dad, so.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. My dad's like he's the youngest son in his family. So they're a lot more traditional, and so for them, they were even more stricter than my dad. It's more like, you know, you daughters, you can't go anywhere. You have to learn how to cook and clean to prepare yourselves to be, you know, daughter-in-laws one day, sons, you know, like, you have to follow me every weekend to attend these home, like, parties, dinners, so you can learn the old ways and so you can carry my name, carry my reputation. And so I feel like a lot of that kind of held some of us back from doing what we wanted to do. It's just now that, like, because their parents are getting a lot older and they're a lot more, like, lenient, that a lot of us are now able to move forward. But then again, it's kind of like, if they didn't do that, we wouldn't care for our culture. You know, like, I feel like because they kind of, not necessarily forced that upon us.
They what?
Like,
no, I just didn't hear you.
Yeah, because they because they wanted us to, like, be more involved in the Hmong community, the Hmong culture, learning the Hmong ways. Like, yes, it kind of held us back from adapting to the new American, you know, the lifestyle. But at the same time, like, you know, growing up, we learned to appreciate it. Because if they never did, we wouldn't care to worry about that stuff, you know? Because I know a lot of, a few Hmong people where it's like their parents never, you know, forced any of that on them. So they don't really know how to speak Hmong. They don't really know how to cook, you know? And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's just, there's a huge difference, you know? And so I guess, like, with the bad comes the good, too, you know?
The what?
With the bad comes the good, too, yeah. You learn to appreciate the little things. Is there anything else you wanted to know?
This is very moving.
Is it? Okay.
So what do you... You're obviously extremely motivated and have been for a very long time. What do you envision that you'd like to be doing when you finish?
When I finish?
Not that you have to put it in a little box and say, you know.
Yeah. Well, can I start from now, I guess, from here today? Well, I guess because of all my experience of seeing, like, so many things, seeing how things failed, seeing how things succeeded, like, how people are, and how important it is to try to find success, how important it is to try to, you know, make the best of what you have for your parents and for yourself. It's part of the reason why I came to university, and then not only that, part of the reason why I joined CASA, the Hmong American Student Association. With them, every year they hold a college day. And what it is we pick up students, Hmong students, and we open it up to anybody that's interested too, but particularly Hmong students. We pick them up from the Metro Detroit area, Pontiac, and the Lansing area. And we try to bring them here, you know, teach them about financial aid, teach them about college, and try to break any, like, try to answer their questions, any of their worries. And basically the reason why I wanted to do it is because I want to encourage other Hmong students to really make the best of what they have. Because I understand that, you know, not a lot of us are fortunate to have, you know, everything paid for, everything. But I just want to teach them that if you really want something, you have to work hard for it. Because our parents did, you know. So if they can do it, why can't we do it too? I mean, if anything, we have more tools than they do. So, like, I want to, you know, just help encourage them to really go far, you know. Because, like, growing up, not so much as it was before, but a lot of, like, girls that are my age, they got pregnant young, they got married early, especially back then, you know, like, with my sister's generation. But, like, a lot of them, like, you know, got married young, they had kids young, and it's just, like, it's just, I don't want that to happen. Like, I mean, I want people to be able to do more for themselves, I guess. Because I've seen a lot of those people struggle, you know, after having kids so young and stuff. And, you know, like, I have a few cousins that went through it, and they just tell me, you know, make sure you go to school because it's so hard, you know? So it's just, like, seeing all of that, I really want to encourage these students to really work harder, I guess, you know, to really aim higher. Because I know how your parents are. They're so close, kind of. You don't see anything except, you know, just school, getting married. You know, like, I want them to see Japan. I want them to see that, hey, you can study abroad, you know.
Have you? Or
no? I've always wanted to, but I'm hoping that I can soon before I graduate.
Where would you like to go?
I really don't care. I've always wanted to go to Europe.
Because they have a lot of overseas programs.
Yeah, they do. I know I was trying to get into one this summer, but I was like, I need to get my summer classes in, so.
Oh.
Yeah, but I'm hoping I can try to do that soon.
They even have, like, month-long programs.
They have two-week ones, too. Like, ones that last only 2 weeks. So, I really want to try. It's expensive, but I need to think.
It's very exciting to travel. Mm-hmm.
Something I've always wanted to do. If not now, I'll definitely do it after I graduate. But I really want them to see what I saw when I was growing up.
The what?
I really want them to see what I saw when I was growing up, you know. And I think a big part of it, like I said, is my mom and my siblings. So,
your siblings must be very proud of you, too.
I hope they are. I hope I make them proud. Because I'm very proud of them. Like, even though some of them didn't go to school, it's fine. Because I know school's not for everyone, but like, I want them to still want, you know, more for themselves. Our parents worked hard for it. So.
Wow. Just a couple more things. How many students are in the Hmong Association?
On Ebor, there's 7, and then with the general body meeting, there's, I think last year we only had like maybe another set of 10. Because the way our organization is, it's open to everyone. So we have like Vietnamese people, Korean people, they're all in our group. And we just all kind of enjoy, you know, learning about each other's like cultures and stuff. But if I would have to say Hmong, there's probably a total of like about maybe 20 of us. But there's still some that are on campus that we haven't been able to reach yet. So I'm hoping that this year we can focus on reaching out more.
And you're the head of the organization?
I'm just the vice president, but I was the president 2 years ago. Now it's Jesse Hang. He's a sophomore. I think he's going to be a junior. He's president, so I'm vice president. I could have gone for vice president, but I was like, I already had my year. So I was like, I want to give it to someone else so that they can experience it. Because, I mean, being president was so tough. It was challenging. Because it was my sophomore year, so that was during the year where it's like, I'm trying to figure out my major, trying to figure out what I want to do with my life, trying to figure out who I am. And at the same time, I'm struggling between my, like, what I'm good at and what I'm bad at. It was a huge mess, but I don't regret it at all. Like, it has really helped me mature, and it has really helped me, like, learn a lot more about like, professionalism, communication, confidence.
About what?
Confidence. And I don't know, I don't regret it at all. Even though
that's
my grades went down, like, I don't regret it at all.
Well, it's a good experience.
Yeah, it is. So I wanted someone else to be able to struggle and, like, learn from it, too. So, like, so Jesse's president now. I'm trying my best to help him to make it easier because the year I was president, college days are biggest event. And there's nobody set any rules on how to plan it, how to, you know, get funds for it, how to get transportation, how to get rooms and stuff. So what I had to go through was because all last year's e-board, they just handed me a binder full of receipts and like old, you know, like programs and stuff. So I had to go through everything, you know, make sure I got the main parts, you know, find resources and use my resources to get it planned. And it was a stressful year because, yeah, so I'm trying to help him so it's not too bad, you know. But,
I think this, for now, uh-huh. You've given me a really good interview. I do have one question. Do you still do any artwork on the side or not?
I don't. I wish I did.
What did you like to do?
I liked designing clothes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I like doing that. But do you do like music and dance too, or? Yeah. For Hasa, actually.
Hasa?
Hasa, the Hmong American Association.
Oh.
Sorry,
That's okay.
For the past 2 years, I've helped choreograph the traditional Hmong and the modern dances, because every year, like, we're part of an umbrella group of HASL, the Asian Pacific American.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you know Andrea Louie?
Yes, I met her before. Dr. Louie.
Oh.
Yeah. And she helped us with College Day. Her and Joe did with funds. So we took them out to dinner for Thanksgiving and stuff. So I know her.
That's nice.
Yeah.
So when do they have College Day? At the beginning of the year?
Actually at the fall. I think we planned ours this year for October 20th. I'll send you an email.
Okay.
I would love for you to come and join us.
I'd love to see it. This is what you do for the students coming?
Yep, for high school. Like, basically anyone in high school. We just bring them in, you know, take them on a tour, hold workshops for them. We have, like, people come in and give speeches. We want to encourage the parents to come, but most of the time, like, the parents don't come. But
there might be some events that day that I could learn something from.
Yeah. I mean, if you want, you could probably try to talk to a few of the students too, if you like.
Well, let me see how that part goes.
Okay.
But there might be, do you do dances and stuff or performance?
Okay, now with that, it's Cultural Vogue this year.
Cultural what?
Cultural Vogue. So cultural and then V-O-G-U-E. Yeah. Apostle hosts that every year, or every other year. That's in February. So if you want, I can send you an invitation.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, you'll be able to see all their cultural dances and the modern dance. And HASL will be participating this year, so you'll be able to see that. If we do any other showcases, I'll let you know to see if you want to come out or not.
Okay.
I think we have a few videos on YouTube too. I'll find them for you. But yeah, like basically we hold one where we just do traditional, we're in our traditional outfits and we do the traditional dancing to the Hmong music.
Not until February though?
Yeah, that's not until February. And then the other one is just hip hop, modern.
Do you do anything with the new year or not?
We don't. We haven't been able to. I guess usually during the time of the New Year's is when we're trying to choreograph and teach the members to perform in February. So we haven't yet participated, but this year we kind of want to help them. We would like to take part of it. Because most of the time when HASL like participates, like we just help volunteer by doing parking or helping them sell tickets, but we kind of wanted to do something where it takes planning, like take part of the planning. So we'll see how that works this year. I know the previous HASLs, they did like a date auction in the traditional Hmong outfits at the to raise money for the org. But we haven't done that past couple years. So
I don't know what Joe was, whether he was going to put me on the email list or whether that's something you can do when there are events or
I'll put you on it.
You'll add me to it?
Yeah, I'll add you to it. So that whenever we have our like GBMs or events, we'll
and if I can then I'll come and,
our GBMs, you should come out, it's a lot of fun too.
Which is?
Our general body meetings.
What's
hold
that?
It's our like bi-weekly meeting that we hold for the general public. So like we'll do one where it's like Hmong 101, we'll teach them how to speak Hmong.
Uh-huh.
Or we'll have one where it's like a Hmong food day and we'll make the different types of
food. That I'd love to see.
Yeah, definitely. So
okay.
I'll send you
the
that
food
one.
Day?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I would really enjoy that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Joe usually comes to every meeting, so you'll have him there too. So basically, back to your question, I'm sorry.
I'm asking you lots of questions.
Well, after I graduate, I want to try to get into the master's program here for accounting. If I could get in that would be awesome. So if I can do that, then I want to try to get my CPA after the master's. And then for me, I'm still debating between corporate or just working at an audit, a tax accounting firm. With my type of personality, I'm not really a salesperson. You know, I'm not that aggressive, and I don't really.
You're not a what person?
I'm not aggressive. I'm not like. I guess I don't know how to communicate that well. I guess.
I was just gonna say your communication skills are excellent.
All right, thank you.
No, I mean you really express yourself very, very well.
Thank you very much.
And very articulate and diplomatic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you kind of explain all different angles of an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
thank
but
you
don't,
so much.
Don't.
That means a lot to me.
Well, I'm big for. You've got a lot of good skills.
Okay. And that's because of pasta, but I'm thinking more of corporate, because I'm more of a person that likes to just, you know, sit down and do the paperwork and stuff, rather than going out and meeting clients. But who knows, we'll see. I'll have to experience
right.
The sea first, you know. But from there on, you know, I'm going to be an accountant for however many years I can, and then I want to open up a business. I don't know what exactly, but I want to open up a business that is probably something to do with my hobby. So maybe baking, or if I'm doing accounting and retail and manufacturing, maybe something in that. I will have to wait and see for that.
You don't have to plan it all now.
At the same time, though, I still do want to try to get involved with the Hmong community, because I feel like they can do a lot more with the youth. Like, especially for Hasa, like, it's hard for us already to reach, you know, high school students, and I feel like if the Hmong community, like, the Hmong community, like, the associations usually consist of, like, our elders, I feel like if they can get involved in it too, it could be something bigger. Because right now, like, you know, the relationships aren't that great. It's just like...
Between who and who?
I'll just say for Hasa, MSU Hasa, the elders, like, it's good, like, nothing bad, but it's just like, oh, you know, like, can we, you know, you can set up a tent here, you can, you know, volunteer, you know, but it's kind of like, we want to do more, you know, like, we want to take part in planning activities, maybe, or maybe we can do, maybe plan a different activity for the community, because, usually throughout the year they hold soccer tournaments, and basically there's like tons of food, there's sports, and basically that. That's to fundraise for the New Year's, which is at the end of the year. But it's like that's all they do every year, and it's kind of like I want to see more action. So hopefully we can work on that in the next couple years. See what where to take us. Because the Hasa, if you compare us to the ones in Minnesota, they're more active, like they're more
they
activist.
Huge,
yeah.
Huge,
I mean,
it's
population.
Like 35,000.
Yeah. So it's a lot better for them. But for us, I feel like we're not doing anything. So I want to see if maybe we could be more active in the years to come. I hope I answered your questions.
Yes, you've done a great job. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank
if you need anything else, just let
you'll
me
hear
know.
From me.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, yeah.
You know what? So I started this maybe a year and a half ago while I was doing other projects.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm real focused.
Mm-hmm.
This is my main project right now. And it's... It's interesting because, you know, I can't talk about every subject that there is.
Yeah.
We're talking less than 100 pages.
Yeah.
And it's not as if other things have been written about Hmong people in Michigan. But when I read about the community's experiences in other states, and then when I interview people here, it can complement.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. I just love meeting all of you. It's great.
Thank
I mean, it's
you.
A whole new, you know, world for me.
Yeah.
I've interviewed a lot of people from different countries who came here. Actually, a number of different Asian countries, but I think it's really fascinating, your history.
Yeah.
And it's pretty phenomenal. How do you maintain a culture when you had to be dispersed from so many hostile environments,
mm-hmm.
and then without the written language for a long time? It's just amazing to me how you are all able to, you know, more or less, different people do more and different people do less, but, you know, and everybody's been so warm and hospitable when I explain what I'm doing. I mean, sometimes I think I bug people too much, and then they don't answer for a while, and then they come back and answer, so.
No, not at all. This might be irrelevant, but if it helps, I know, you know, like, during when, like, the economy was kind of low, we had a lot of cousins and family members that moved out of Michigan.
Yes.
Start chicken farms and
what is it, Arkansas or North Carolina?
Arkansas, North Carolina. Some of them succeeded, some of them, you know, it's a struggle. My parents, they even went down to North Carolina for like a year to go farming, and now they're back and they're working, but I was just like, you guys are crazy.
Yeah. Well, in the past, as a people, you've been forced out of places, mm-hmm. and now this is a common problem to all of us in mm-hmm. Michigan in terms of the economy and the whole country.
Yeah.
So it's a little different, but what also interests me is when people go through hard times, some people just kind of fall apart or come unglued. But as a whole, it seems that all these difficult experiences from the previous generations
mm-hmm.
and your parents' generation, it's also given you strength.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just my perspective.
It really does, yeah.
You know, some people can throw up their hands and say, oh, well.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like whoever I've talked to, you know, everybody's just been really motivated,
mm-hmm.
as well as being really nice. I mean, sometimes, well, sometimes people are, you know, oh, they're doing their thing,
uh-huh.
and they're not very nice, or, uh-huh. I mean, it's a really beautiful combination.
Uh-huh.
I have a question for you, and you know, tell me if I'm nuts for asking it, but I suppose it's like with all different ethnic groups, but how do you know when you meet people before you start talking to them that they're Hmong and not Lao nationals or Chinese?
You know, I'm still trying to figure that out. Like, I'll go to the store and I'm like, oh my gosh, they're Hmong. 5 minutes later, you hear them from home. But then it's like you can sense it. I don't know why, but for me, like, it's just, you just get to know. You're just like, oh, they're Hmong, you know, you just know. Because you can tell, like, I don't know why, but, like with the Koreans and Chinese, like, you can sort of tell the difference because of the way they dress, and then, like, maybe some facial structures, but for when it's a Hmong person, it's just a sense of feeling that you get. Like, you're just like, oh, they're Hmong, you just know it. And I've never been wrong, so, I've never been wrong, but you just have this sense of feeling. Sometimes you can just look at each other and just like, okay, yeah, you know, but
that's
sometimes
great.
You don't even have to look at them. You can just feel it, that, and you'll hear them speaking on that. I'm still trying to figure that out, though.
Well, I've never had the courage to ask somebody, well, you know, how do you know? I mean, it happens with other ethnic groups,
mm-hmm.
you know. You know, all people who are Caucasian,
mm-hmm.
but then within the Caucasian people, then they know,
mm-hmm.
even in terms of religious beliefs,
mm-hmm.
they'll be able to sense and,
I don't know, like I said, for me, it's always been just like a tingle, and it's just like a sense that you're just like, you know, they're Hmong.
Cool.
It's almost like a, like we have a connection or something. Because we could be in a totally different state. You know, like I could be in Miami and I'll see a Hmong person outside and I could sense it already. they could just know, and then you'll hear them. Because the way I am is all how, like, kind of, you know, try to listen. Are they well? You'll listen to them, and they'll speak more. You're like, okay, yeah.
Well, this restaurant here, I just went there the other day.
Mm-hmm.
No Thai?
Oh, yeah, yep.
Because the Hangs told me that they're owned by Hmong.
Uh-huh.
So I'm in there, and then I hear somebody saying Minnesota. So uh-huh. I said, okay.
Yep, exactly.
There were two young people, one who was working there and one, uh-huh. Well, when are you going to Minnesota? You know, I said, okay.
See? You know what you can tell.
Well, no, I can't tell by looking. Yeah. I mean, you know. I don't know.
But the whole Minnesota thing, that's always
me. You know, they're just kind of, oh, when are you going to Minnesota? I said, okay. But another question I have, and I got, and this is, how do you say, it's more of an opinion question.
Mm-hmm.
These people, the Hang family, mm-hmm. who were some of the first ones who came here, because
mm-hmm.
he was very high up in the military,
mm-hmm.
and they, as you mentioned, your uncle?
My uncle, yep. Mm-hmm.
So they got out sooner than other people.
That's the funny thing. My uncle actually came later than our family. I don't know why, but all I know is that he's worked alongside General Ling Pao
mm-hmm.
a couple times. I know he said that they almost died one time. I think it's just like, I guess some people were lucky enough to come first, but then...
They're what?
Like some of the higher ranks, they're lucky enough to come first, but some of them had to like get divided, some of them got captured, some of them came later. I've heard my dad say that like a few of their friends that were in the military that were higher up, they got captured to go to labor camps. I don't know if one just... I'm not going to say because I'm not too sure. But then, yeah, all I know is that my uncle came later, and I know that he was pretty up there too. Something like he can't go back to Laos, because if he does, then he's going to be in trouble.
Well, there's a lot of, what do you call it, retribution?
Yeah. My dad has gone back to Laos.
Oh, that was another question I had. Yeah. Has he been back?
Yeah, he's been back a couple of times. He's been to Laos, he's been to Thailand.
Have you ever? Oh, you haven't gone.
I haven't. I would love to go. Only if my dad goes, though, because I know I'd get lost, you know. But I would love to go back to see how it is. I know that my uncle's very sad about it. I know my dad, you know, they get sad sometimes because, you know, they grew up there and they're just like, it's very sad because it's not their land anymore. So, especially my uncle, since he's not able to go back. It's fine.
But with the, just one last question, with the, all the Hmong people who own these restaurants,
mm-hmm.
they go under that they're Thai restaurants, but they're owned by Hmong people.
I know.
And it's like, I wonder, this is just a question,
yeah.
because a lot of their history, they had to be, almost hidden.
Yeah.
Whether this is a modern version almost,
mm-hmm.
that they're not coming out and saying, these are Hmong restaurants. I don't know.
Well, Hmong food, the way our food is, it's like our own rendition of Thai, Laos, and Vietnamese food. So we don't really have our own food. Well, we have our own food though, but I don't think, you know, the general public wouldn't like it. They probably think it's kind of weird because like our food is like boiled veggies with like pork and meat, like because the way we like do is like we kill a whole cow or we kill a whole pig and we pretty much eat everything of it, and I think some people might be a little because you know Thai food is just chicken, beef or pork, and you know well there's some Hmong restaurants in Minnesota
where
it's legitly the whole menu is Hmong food. But that's for a Hmong population, like, you know, they have a big population of Hmong people. I think if they tried here, I don't know if they'll succeed, you know. Because a lot of people don't know Hmong people, you know. So it's kind of like, they're like, what? You know. So I think it's easier for them to make business if it's under Thai. That's how I would see it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also interesting because the Thai were not always so good to the monkeys.
Yeah.
Which is another, well, you know, what happens with different ethnic groups who fight in their own lands, and then they come here and they don't have to fight anymore.
Yeah.
There's no...
You know about that, that's actually pretty... Well, you have a good point there, but funny thing is, my dad, he's always like, you can't date a Vietnamese guy. You can't date a Vietnamese guy. You can try, you know, like, okay, Caucasian guy, but you have to marry him. But I'm dating a Vietnamese guy right now. he just met my dad over the weekend. My dad's just like, oh, you're making friends with Vietnamese people? I was like, Dad, I'm like, you know, because the Vietnamese people that are here, they're not the ones that we're fighting. They're the ones that were fleeing for the same reason, you know?
That's true.
So, it's just funny because, like, my family's so strict about that. They'll be okay with the Chinese, but not the Vietnamese people.
That's interesting. Yeah. But what about the Lao people?
Not really, too.
No. I mean, I wouldn't think.
They would say okay, Chinese okay, Korean okay, you know, Caucasian okay, no African Americans, no Vietnamese people. It's a funny thought.
No, it's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been able to help me with some of the things that I'm interested in learning.
Mm-hmm. I think, though, like, with my dad, I feel like because we're getting older, things are changing, they're starting to learn and accept new things, that eventually he'll be okay. It's just like, it's no longer Vietnamese Hmong. It's more like, you know, you love him, he loves you, that's all that matters. But for the longest time, it was always like, no Vietnamese. You know, why are you making friends with Vietnamese people? You know, don't you know they're bad? You know, don't you know that they chase us out of our country? I'm just like, that's true. But it's just, you have to kind of...
But it's interesting too, and I asked you in the beginning, and I want to ask you again. Mm-hmm. And this is my ignorance because I haven't still read it. No, I mean, I haven't read enough yet to understand.
Mm-hmm.
But when you say, it seems like the animosity is more towards the Vietnamese than the Lao people. But the Lao people who were, how do you say, collaborating with the communists from, what is it, the... You had the Lao who were the communists, and then you had the Vietnamese, the communists,
mm-hmm.
and then you had the Americans, and you had some of the Lao then.
Mm-hmm. You know, I
because I feel bad now that I started to correct you. I said, what are you talking about the Vietnamese in the beginning?
The Vietnam War, the secret war.
I mean, I think the whole thing is... I mean, it's sad, but it's also fascinating that...
I don't know how my parents think, but if I was to try to think like them, I would think maybe it's more like everything started because of the Vietnamese. That maybe that's what kind of carried it towards them.
Oh, I see. So the Lao people who became the communists, they were affiliated... With
I think
the Vietnamese.
So, because...
Okay, that's going to help me because there are two really good books that different people I've interviewed have. What is Shooting the Stars? Or...
I haven't read that.
And then there's another one that really explains, you know, what was going on.
Yeah.
So what you're saying now is going to help me when I read these, the histories.
I'm not exactly sure if that's one, but that's how I would see it. It's just it carrying it through. Because, I mean, they were living somewhat fine in the mountains, you know, with the Laos people is fine. Because my dad knows how to speak and write Laos. He knows how to speak and write, you know, Yeah, like, if anything, I think it would be because it carried from the Vietnamese. Like, if you join the Vietnamese people, example, you betrayed us. I just never really heard them say, because when they tell the stories, they're always saying Nyala. So the Nyala is always the Vietnamese. They never say Mua, which is the Laos. Like whenever they say, oh, you know, they're chasing us, it would be the Vietnamese are chasing us. Nyala is chasing us. So I think, I don't know, maybe they were raised to.
So are the, way. In a way, I mean, I'd have to talk to different people, but are the Laos to the Vietnamese and the Hmong were to the Americans in terms of carrying out, I mean, we, the United States, used your people, your ancestors, I mean, you're American,
yeah.
I mean, but
yeah.
used your parents and your grandparents to fight in this war.
I never thought of that.
I don't know, I'm just...
That makes sense, though, but all I know is that whenever my parents tell stories, it's always be the Vietnamese, it's never the Laos. So it's the Vietnamese army, which is nice. But then again,
I hope you don't mind me asking these kinds of questions.
No.
Well, they're very sensitive.
Yeah.
And I'm just asking, I mean, I don't have the answers. I'm just curious as
I love that you're asking these questions, because then it just shows me that I need to go ask more questions, and I need to learn
okay.
more. But all I know is that, I know that more in the modern day, it's like, I started to notice in 2001, around that time, because I was a little bit older, so I understand it more. I know there was a big issue between the Laos people and the Hmong people. Because the Laos people, or the Lao army, would be chasing, because there's still Hmong people that are hiding in the jungles to this day. They're still hiding. And the Laos army are poisoning the plants, you know, chasing them.
You mean now?
I don't know about today, but I know for
many years.
In the modern year, era. Many years. I think there were two BBC reporters that went there. And they documented the Hmong.
Oh, with
there.
The yellow rain?
I think so. And like the kids would, you know, when they eat the plants and stuff, their stomachs would, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the only time that I ever really heard the Laos people treating the Hmong people bad. But talking about the stories back then would be the Vietnamese. Maybe they met the Laos too. But,
that's the, how do you say, the enemy.
Yeah.
In the mind.
Yeah. So.
And But
it includes the Laos people. So I'm guessing maybe that would be it. I'll have to ask my dad.
I'll be curious what he says.
I'll get back to you on that. I'll get back
Will
to you on that, yeah.
I mean, I think the whole thing is...
Because that's a good question. I never thought of that. For me, it was always just, you know, I always questioned the Vietnamese. I never questioned the Laos, you know. So...
That's interesting.
Yeah, I'll have to ask my dad that. Because like I said, like growing up, they only said the Vietnamese, so we only paid attention to that, and then it's the Vietnam War, the Secret War, so it's just like, oh, you know, Vietnamese, so.
Yeah, if you could write me a few sentences after you talk to him.
I'll go ask him, and I'll get back to you.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, you're giving me some courage to, that when I do these next interviews,
That's
I feel a
good question.
Little freer
you
to
ask.
You
should ask,
You know, I mean, the only way that I can learn is by asking the questions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and even once I finish this book, it's not as if I'm some expert or something. I mean, all this is like, because most people have never heard of, you know, the first time probably was with this movie, Gran Torino.
Uh-huh.
I mean, so, how do you say that? I can paint a portrait, but it's a superficial portrait because it's only touching on certain things. But the strength is what these stories And I can't even include the whole stories in this particular book, but it's possible that there will be a second book with the full-length interviews.
Uh-huh.
And the other generation that I want to get, I was thinking of asking Christine's parents, maybe you know too, do you know any women who make the tapestries or who used to make them?
No, I don't. I know my grandma, she made mom clothing, but I've never met anyone that actually made the actual blanket.
Mm-hmm. She's not living anymore?
She's actually in Minnesota.
Oh.
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know anyone that has ever made the blanket. Not in Michigan, I don't think so.
There used to be some people who sold these tapestries at the farmer's market in Lansing, but I don't think they're there anymore.
I can ask around.
Would you?
Yeah, I'll ask around and see if I can find any.
Because there is the collection at the MSU Museum, but I want to talk to the person who's made them, not somebody else who's written about the material that somebody else made.
Okay. Yeah, I'll ask.
And I would probably need somebody to translate, because if it's of your grandparent generation, they may not speak English.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so you've got two things with your father.
Ask my dad about the living in the house, and then I'll ask around for the blanket.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. I'm curious too now, so.
Okay.
I hope, you know, everything that I said today was helpful.
Like, very.
Yeah, I know.
I mean,
I'm still,
you went further for me,
mm-hmm.
like I sensed what I wanted to ask, but then you got right into it. So. But I'll probably, even if it's 3 or 4 months from now, you'll still hear from me.
Yes, no problem.
And if you let me know when there are events, and if I can come, I can come. And
mm-hmm.
the food one, I really want to come.
I definitely will. I'll make something special for you.
Oh, but no, I mean, when you have the day, don't you have different people making different foods?
No. Actually, it's just Hmong food. Like, we make Hmong food for everybody else to try.
At what event is that?
This is just our general.